For now, we are talking about malaria and mosquitoes and understanding the conversations and the difference between the two. Malaria and mosquitoes are two things we expect to go together like water and wetness. But have you ever thought and stopped and think as to why that is? Well, malaria is a disease caused by a Plasmodium parasite. It's transmitted by the bite of infected mosquitoes. Common symptoms of it include chills, fever, sweating, usually occurring a few weeks after being bitten. Now, this is a condition which needs proper medical diagnosis in order for anything to be confirmed. Another important characteristic around this disease are all the misconceptions around it. Some common ones include eating garlic before I sleep will repel mosquitoes. And another one that we have come across is the idea that once you get malaria, you will never get it again. Misunderstandings and stigma related to a disease can have effects which are just as bad as the disease itself. Now, to discuss and dispel these myths, we have Tabitha Mwangi on the line. She's a senior lecturer at Pony University, and she researches in malaria. Thanks so much for joining us this morning, Tabitha.
Thank you.
Let's start off this conversation by you basically telling us what malaria is and how it affects the human body on a biological level.
Yeah, so like you said, malaria is caused by that parasite injected by the mosquito into our blood. So when the parasite gets into the skin, it goes straight into the liver. And once it gets into the liver, it multiplies within the liver cells and releases plenty more parasites. And these parasites cause problems when they get into the blood vessels. So they infect blood vessels and they multiply. And when they multiply, they burst these red blood cells and infect even more. So this multiplication of parasites in the red blood cells and bursting them is what causes disease in human beings. So it will cause disease by the very fact that they're bursting these red blood cells. So they're reducing the red blood cells in the body, and that causes anemia and all the other related diseases. And also because they're releasing toxins, all this destruction is releasing toxins in the body, and this causes all these non-specific symptoms, the diarrhea, the vomiting, the joint pains, the headaches. And scientists are not completely clear exactly what happens, but it's assumed that it's this release of this many toxins in the blood that's causing all these symptoms.
Mm. Let's talk through the symptoms. You've mentioned a few. What are the symptoms that one should look out for if you might think you are infected with malaria?
So I think the most common, the one that's most prevalent, is fever. So if you've been in a place that has malaria, one of the main symptoms you find is fever, that is raised body temperature in children and adults as well. And in adults, another symptoms you'll find is headache and joint pain. That is hard to see in children because some of them may not be able to tell you, I'm feeling headache or this. But adults will have headaches and joint pains. And children, mainly with fever. And then there'll be other things. They could vomit, could have diarrhea, but the main thing is the fever.
If you are sitting at home and you have any questions, feel free to get those through 021-446-0567. I'm chatting to Tabitha Mwangi, researcher in malaria, and we are understanding malaria and mosquitoes and debunking some myths. Something you mentioned, many people have this preconceived idea when you are traveling and you're heading into the dark Africa that you will get infected by malaria. What are some of the precautions or the things you can do to ensure that you don't get infected? Or is it even a case of stressing about that?
I guess there are certain places, there are certain parts of Africa where you know, the probability of being bitten by a malaria-infected parasite, mosquito, is very high. Mm. So if you're in such places, then it is good to sleep under a mosquito, an insecticide-treated bed net. So that's very important. And also to use repellents because that will help prevent you getting bitten. But if you've been from a region that has malaria. The most I think where we have problems is what you do after you come home from these malaria infected areas. So trying to prevent being bitten, you'll do all you can, but sometimes it's impossible. You can't just stay the whole time under the bed net. You want to go out in the evening, you want to do other things when the mosquitoes are out. So the most important thing, when you come back with any fever, you have to suspect that it is malaria and ask the clinician that you visit, make sure they know that you've been to a malaria endemic place so that you get treatment. So it's extremely crucial, actually, when you come back to observe yourself within that month, do you have any symptoms that look like it is malaria, then make sure that the clinician treating you knows you've been to a malaria endemic area.
Obviously, you've worked with research with regards to malaria, and you've been supervising students. What are the biggest misconceptions and myths about this that you have dealt with in your work, in your years working with malaria?
Maybe not have dealt with, but have observed other people deal with. Is when I first started doing research in Kilifi, it was a very rural area, and there was a belief that children who have fits, they are convulsing, have been attacked by an evil spirit. And so, what mothers would do is, if a child starts fitting, they'd take the child to a witch doctor, or find some other herbal treatments, but not take them to hospital because they thought that was a spiritual problem. And as you know, that there is cerebral malaria, when malaria parasites hide in the brain and they cause problems in the brain, and a child can fit or even go into a coma. And so if that treatment is delayed now to this process of going to see a witch doctor or going to do herbs, that delays treatment, and so by the time the child presents to the hospital, they're more likely to die because treatment has been delayed. So these myths can actually be quite dangerous. You know, they can be that extreme of actually extremely dangerous because you're delaying treatment of children. But there are other myths that are also about just misunderstandings. You know, like, you know, you play in the rain. You know, you hear mothers say, "Don't play in the rain, it's malaria." And, you know, or people will say, "Don't eat mangoes because mangoes have malaria." So, and those ones you can almost understand where they're coming from, because, you know, in Kenya, at least during the malaria season is always during the rainy season, because that's when the mosquitoes have a chance to breed, because it has rained and then there's a place for the mosquitoes to breed. And so the rainy season always comes with the malaria season. And so you can see where people think malaria and rain, you know, rain causes malaria. When it comes to mangoes, it's the fact that male mosquitoes feed on sweet things. So if you cut a mango and leave it, you know, you'll find mosquitoes feeding on the mangoes. But it's because these are male mosquitoes looking for something sweet to eat. But someone will think, you know, it's the eating of that mango that will make you have malaria. So there are myths that are, you know, almost funny, and then there are myths that are actually dangerous. So, you know, it's working out, especially those myths that cause delay of treatment, that are extremely crucial to be dealt with.
We have Peter on the line from Milnerton who has a question for you. Good evening, Peter.
Good evening, and thank you for taking my call. Yes, I thought maybe you could get an injection against malaria before you even go to these places. Is that possible? In fact, I've just had another thought. At what age can a baby be injected, if that's the case?
Tabitha?
Okay, now, talking about vaccination, I mean, there's just one vaccine that's close to licensing, but its efficacy, how strong it is, it's quite a weak vaccine. So it protects against about 26-36%. So it's not that strong. So that would be, I think they're rolling back, they're rolling it in a few countries in next year, and in a couple of years it will be available, but it is not fully protective. It's not like a polio vaccine. It's not fully protective. So at the moment, there is nothing that you can give a child. You can give prophylaxis. There's Malarone that people take when they're going to malaria regions. But all those things, they're not completely protective. So you still have to watch yourself when you come back. Because I'm really emphasizing the issue of when you come back from a malaria-infected area, you must make sure that every fever, you take care that you tell the doctor that you have come from malaria endemic area so that they test for malaria.
Peter, does that answer your question?
I think so, yes. Thank you. Thank you for all the experts that come and help us as well. Thank you, Doc.
Thanks so much for phoning in, Peter. Let's continue the conversation, Tabitha. I read somewhere about malaria risk areas. What are these and what classifies an area to be called a malaria risk area?
So there's a lot of research that looks at malaria risk areas. So that central belt, you know, that just within Africa is a very, you know, is places that are wet, and it's a climate. The climate is suitable. They're warm and they're wet. And in Africa, we've got a good region that is warm and wet. But for example, in Kenya, if I can take an example of Kenya, we have around the coast and near Lake Victoria, that is wet and warm. Uganda, for example, is a whole country. Most of it is wet and warm. So it's having the right temperatures and rain that makes the place very suitable for malaria. Because the issue is, can mosquitoes breed? And if mosquitoes can breed, is it warm enough for the malaria parasite to develop within the mosquito? So if you have temperatures above 16 degrees, they give, you know, there's always a range, but, you know, the research says below 16 degrees, it's difficult for the malaria parasite itself to develop within the mosquitoes. Above 40 degrees, again, it is too hot for the parasite to develop. So it needs to be just there, warm and wet. And that is what is needed for the mosquito to breed and the malaria parasite itself to develop. So there are certain places that are very endemic for malaria. And also, it depends on also how much control there is. So if you're able to, you know, use insecticides, spraying, so you spray the houses to prevent mosquitoes coming into your house, and you make treatments on time, it is very possible to actually control malaria even in places like that. But you also need, so it happens that in places where there's a lot of wealth and people can buy mosquitoes and they can get treated on time and everything is done according to, you know, it's done properly, then you can be able to control malaria in such places. But at the moment, there's a whole belt in Africa, warm and wet, where there's still a lot of malaria.
We just got a WhatsApp on the line, 0725671567, from Susan asking, is malaria contagious? Do I have to be stressed if one of my family members went to a malaria risk area?
Malaria is only spread by mosquitoes, so you can't get it, you know, by contact or anything like that. So it's a mosquito, and that's because, and it's not, it's because when the mosquito takes blood from a human being, there is a certain stage of the development of the malaria parasite that has to happen within the mosquito before it gets back into another person and gives disease. So for me to give you malaria, it have to be you take my blood and inject it into your body. So direct contact can only be through maybe a blood transfusion, but not by just being with somebody. It has to go through the mosquito.
Tabitha, do you think enough is being done to inform people about malaria? Do you think the access to information as to symptoms, as to what to look out for, as to how to prevent this and how to treat this, do you think people know what to do, or do you think more should be done?
I think more should be done. More should be done. And malaria, you know, malaria is also not an easy disease because of the way the symptoms, especially for severe malaria, the symptoms are very nonspecific. You know, because if you have a headache, I can have a headache with typhoid. You know, you've had people who, you know, I know a classmate of mine who had malaria in pregnancy, but she was in Nairobi, and so people didn't think about malaria, and she was treated for typhoid, and it was too late. By the time they realized she had malaria, it was too late, and she died of malaria in pregnancy. So, you know, the diagnosis is not so straightforward because there's so many, the symptoms of malaria can happen at the look very much like other diseases. Malaria and pneumonia, for example, in a child, if you have severe pneumonia and severe malaria, they look very much the same. There'll be difficulty in breathing. There'll be, you know, the breathing that happens when you have severe malaria for a small child is the same as that of pneumonia. So you'll find that even with treatment, it's difficult to tell the diseases apart. So, you know, malariologists will say, you know, if you're in a malaria endemic area and you've got a fever, we'll treat you for malaria and then for everything else that may be happening in your body. because we don't know, you know, which what is what. Even when you have, because another thing is that malaria parasites, if we're in a place that has a lot of malaria, malaria parasites are very common. So when you find a malaria parasite in somebody who's living in such a place, we still have to look for other diseases, because it might be they have malaria parasites, but they have other diseases as well. So there's that complication. But for someone who's traveled from a malaria-free area to a malaria area, then, you know, finding malaria parasites means you have malaria, so it may be easier to treat. But treatment of malaria is not that, you know, the symptoms of malaria are not that obvious, because they are similar to many other diseases. So that's a clinical problem. But and so as much as people are being informed, there's also that aspect of there's a lot of similarity between other diseases and malaria, which complicates treatment, and which means also that health practitioners need also to keep being reminded that about these complications as well.
Yeah, let's talk a bit more about mosquitoes generally. Mm. I know I'm one of those people who it's starting again. Why I tend to have many mosquito bites every morning because I sleep with my window open. So the first question around this is, why do certain people get bitten by mosquitoes more than others?
I think a lot of studies have shown that mosquitoes are attracted to carbon dioxide. So if you release a lot of carbon dioxide, you attract mosquitoes. If you're sweating, when you're sweating and hot, you also, you know, attract mosquitoes, and they're attracted to those smells of life. You know, sweat and carbon dioxide attract mosquitoes. So some people release them more than others, and some don't. But it's just, you know, if you're a sweaty person, you're more likely to get bitten because you're attracting mosquitoes just by the amount of you're hot and releasing all those volatile substances from your body that attract mosquitoes. So they're drawn to those human smells, if I can say that. Smelly stalks and all that sort of thing, yeah, they'll attract mosquitoes.
And what do you have to say about myths like eating garlic before one goes to bed will repel mosquitoes, and other people saying staying away from sweet things because mosquitoes are attracted to sweet blood? Is there such a thing as sweet blood, or is this just a myth?
I've heard people say talk about sweet blood. I don't know about that. I think it is that thing of people who just produce, people who are able to produce a lot more of these volatile substances, so from the sweat and the heat and the body smells, attract mosquitoes. But about garlic, I've looked and I haven't found any evidence, any, you know, research that shows that eating garlic repels mosquitoes. But there is mice research that shows that mice that eat, though, so when you crush garlic, there's a compound that comes from crushed garlic, and when that is fed to mice, it reduces the multiplication of malaria parasites in their blood, and they live longer, those who have been fed compound from crushed garlic. But no research has been done in human beings. So, you know, something you do in mice may not necessarily translate into human research. And, you know, how many gallons of, you know, garlic we need to go to eat in order to prevent, you know, malaria parasites multiplying in you, we don't know. But that basic research in mice is there, but nothing has been done in humans. I have heard of garlic oils being sold as repellents, but I no studies have been done to show how effective that is. They haven't been done.
Talking about repellents or keeping mosquitoes away, I'm left with the question, how does one make sure you don't get bitten by mosquitoes? Is there a way to do that?
So there are repellents. There's the DEET, which is a very strong repellent that people use. In Kenya, there's a lot, you know, use that when you're out. You try and cover yourself with clothes, so you can keep yourself, you know, long trousers, long-sleeved shirt, sleep under an insecticide-treated bedmet. So you can try, but I think you can't completely lather yourself in insecticide repellent or walk under a net the whole time. There is a chance that you'll be bitten if you go to a malaria endemic area. And I guess the main thing is to remember that if you treat malaria early, then you're likely to prevent it developing into something more serious. Of course, for children, it's easier to, you know, put them to bed as early as possible, you know, so, you know, immediately, you know, six-ish should be under a mosquito net, or to be in a room that has all the, you know, windows with netting, but they don't get bitten. So with children, you have to be extra careful, because, of course, with the children, malaria can go very quickly. But for an adult, you need to just know, you know, if you get bitten, when you go back home, to make sure that you watch yourself and you watch your children, that any fever that you've come back with is diagnosed properly.
Before I say goodbye, one last question. I'm not sure if we discussed this a bit earlier, but many people believe that once you get malaria, you can't ever get it again. Is this the case, or does it stay with an individual once it is infected?
Yeah, once you get malaria, because that was one of the studies that I did for my PhD, was looking, following people. We followed people for 2 years, about 1,000 people. And the reality is it takes a long time to develop immunity against malaria. I wish it was possible to just get malaria from one infection, because then we'd have found a vaccine. But for malaria, you get infected very many times. So you find, like, in areas where there's a lot of malaria, you find adults rarely get malaria, because they've been infected and had disease over their childhood until they developed immunity. And people, even scientists, don't know how many times you need to be infected and sick before you get immunity. It's not clear, but it appears to be that you need to be infected over and over and, you know, and over and over before you develop this immunity. And even that immunity is not like sterile immunity. You still carry malaria parasites in your blood, but you do not get disease. So you find that in very young children in these areas, you know, like I can say in areas in Kenya where there's a lot of malaria, you find it's the very young kids that are dying of malaria or getting very sick. And by the time they're going to school, they've got lots of parasites, but they're not getting as sick, but they're still carrying a lot of parasites. By the time they're in secondary school, they've got less parasites and they're not getting sick. And in adult, by the time they're adults, they're hardly ever getting sick. So it just takes a very long time. So I don't know how many times. It's not been, you know, scientists have not exactly found out how many episodes of disease you need to have before you develop an immunity, but it's plenty.
Well, thank you very much for joining us tonight, Tabitha. It's been an insightful conversation, and I really hope people are a bit more informed after listening to the conversation we just had. Thank you once again.
Thank you very much. You're welcome.
Tabitha Mwangi, senior lecturer at the Pwani University, who's doing her research in malaria.